Come on to my house, to my house. I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, to my house. I'm gonna give you an apple and a plum and an apricot or two. Hey.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us.
Today we're out at Thimbleberry Farms, which is owned by Bill and Willie Welton, and it's out here on Drake Hill Road. It's on the west side of Drake Hill Road. We're out here right next door to Miranda's Rescue. And we're going to talk about your place out here. How many acres do you have here?
I've got a little over 6 acres.
And when did you buy this place?
Oh my goodness.
1987.
And what was it like when you first bought this property?
Well, the porch we were sitting on, It wasn't. You see the holly tree out there? The blackberries were clear up into the holly tree. They were all the way around the house. The only way you could get into the house was a little path that came up to what was left of the porch here and through that door right there. And the house was abandoned. There were no doors. There were no windows.
And what did you find on the second floor?
A dead cow.
A dead cow in your bedroom on the second floor of this house. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How did you know you had such a gem here?
I didn't. She did.
He wanted acreage, and I wanted my teenage girls to be able to find work. So that ruled out Whitethorn. But it was a good compromise. It had the acreage he wanted, and I knew the house would be a heck of a lot of work, but it was also an old Victorian, which I love. So that's how we ended up with it. It was a compromise.
Yeah, when you're describing the house, you have to realize that the old gentleman that was living here was a bit of an eccentric. He had abandoned the house and he's raising his animals in it. So it was not only had a dead cow up there, but it had a lot of
stuff on the floor.
Wow. What have you done to the property over the years? You've kind of reclaimed it a little at a time.
Yes.
The hedges you see over here, those were all cuttings that I took from the Escalonia next door. And I planted this hedge over around here, and a hedge all along the other side of the property over there. And when I was out digging through the berries, before I found out we even had a well, I noticed there were some leaves sticking up out of the blackberries that didn't look right. I thought, oh, those look a lot like apple leaves, you know? The berries were about 8 or 10 feet tall, and when I got them knocked down, there were some sickly-looking apple trees back in there, and one of them was a Gravenstein, and there was also a Red Delicious, which was really sickly, but the Gravenstein is the one that I grafted all the trees that I have out here from, so it's an original Gravenstein from the area.
And the berries, a lot of them we use for a fence, because with the wind down here on the river, we needed some windbreaks. So what you'll see is lots and lots of rooms made out of the berries. So we use them as fences and as windbreaks.
Borrowed the idea from the British. And I guess in Belgium and in France they do it a lot too. Old hedges.
Hedgerows,
right.
Yeah.
Seemed like a good idea.
And you have a lot of apple trees planted.
I had a little over 100 fruit trees. And then I just did about 100 more this spring that I grafted. I'm playing with figs, and I have pears and Asian pears, and I've tried plums. And I look upon the place as sort of an experiment. I started out with a little experimental orchard back where I found the original apples, and I've been trying varieties a little bit at a time to see what likes to grow here and what tastes good that grows here and doesn't require a lot of artificial things to keep it alive. There's some examples there on the table of things that I've found.
And you grow a lot of, like, heirloom varieties of apples, too.
Well, it's easier to taste than it is to describe. This one right here, it's called a Benny Shogun.
Oh, okay.
And
let me try
this. I use no pesticides or anything, so.
That's good.
Very sweet Japanese dessert apples. My favorite apple I tried growing here, and that's Gala. I love a good Gala apple, but they won't make it here. You have to have a longer season, more heat than we get here. This is one that you're going to be seeing in the markets pretty soon. This is a Johnnigold. This is a cross between a Jonathan Red apple and a Golden Delicious. It's storable to some degree. And you heard of Stella Artois, the beer company from Europe?
Sure.
Well, they make a product called cider, C-I-D-R-E, and this is the apple they use exclusively for it in Europe. Let me see. This is called a Liberty. I'll just cut off a piece.
Now that's a tiny little apple compared to these other giants.
Yeah.
And but it's a beautiful color. It's very white on the inside and it has kind of a rosy sort of red and a yellow two-tone to it. Mmm. Very crisp.
More sprightly too.
Mmm.
It's the right size. Mm-hmm.
It's got a little bit of bite to it.
I like that.
This is a Fiesta. This is a British hybrid of the Pippin. I think if somebody wanted to make a sprightly cider, a little bit of that mixed in would definitely enhance it.
Very sweet. Very juicy. Very juicy.
That's an extremely prolific tree.
Mm. Now, what is your favorite eating apple?
Oh, my apples?
Yeah.
Well, my absolute favorite is that cherry cox, but the Benishogun, for a really sweet tasting apple, yeah. I didn't give you one of these. This is a Japanese dessert apple called a Shizuka. It's a very good apple, but...
it's juicy, it's a little bit sweet, but it doesn't have the same apple-y flavor.
Doesn't have that body to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've had mixed emotions about it. And the big hit this year is one that you won't see in the grocery store. It is an heirloom variety, and it's originally from Washington. It's called a Chehalis, and it's a very large green apple. It's sweet tart, and it's relatively complex, but it is so fragile, it has no shelf life. It actually splits when it over-ripens on the tree. If they bump into each other, they bruise. But I couldn't pick them fast enough, and they're all gone now.
So,
my favorite plum that I have out there is an ugly little thing called a green gage. And it's small, it's green, with little red spots on it. It looks like a mistake made by Dr. Seuss or something.
Uh-huh.
but it is so sweet, and yet it's so flavorful all at the same time.
Uh-huh. Now, you guys, the two of you living here in this home, have about 100 fruit trees, plus 100 more that you've just planted. Mm-hmm. And now, how do you make those available to the public?
Well, we've been marketing them through a couple of fruit stands lately. A fruit stand up in Hinesville. Nice lady runs it up there. It's just off of 36. And to another lady over by Three Corners.
Neyland Farm.
Neyland Farms.
Now, you also do a U-pick.
Usually as soon as we have several varieties ripe.
You actually use some social media to do that. You use Craigslist.
I use Craigslist. I use Facebook. We've had people here that we've really enjoyed because they've come 5-6 years in a row now. And they'll stop, even this year when we didn't advertise at all, they stop and say, can we pick? Sure, go ahead. It's delightful to me. I came around the corner one day and this mom had three of her little ones sitting there and she was telling them stories under the apple tree. Oh. I thought, oh, perfect. So I love that. Yes, it's very nice.
We're nothing if not bucolic.
A lot of times when I have a lot of extra, I call Food for People. And I have them come pick. So we do a little bit of everything all the way around. All my falls go over to Miranda's Rescue. They have a big pig over there that just loves me. I like to donate and I like to help. And I love to have the older folks here because they tell me all sorts of uses for apples and all sorts of things that I never would have known if they didn't come visit.
Now, how do you preserve your fruit?
Things like my loganberries, I always freeze enough of those, and I always freeze enough of the peaches.
She canned some pears one year, or Comey's pears. They were positively sinful.
I did plan on maybe doing some rescue, but they've sold so well this year, I'm not even sure I have enough to can, do I?
This is a rescue pear.
That's nobody needs to rescue this pear. This pear should be rescued. This is the biggest pear I've ever seen in my life.
My theory is that they call it a rescue pear because if you're starving, that'll rescue you for about a week.
Like a family of four. How much do you think this weighs?
Probably 2 pounds.
Yeah.
And that's not even the biggest one.
Wow, that's a beauty.
Yeah.
This is Jennifer Bell, and I've had the pleasure of talking with Bill and Willie Welton out here on Thimbleberry Farms, Drakes Hill Road in Fortuna.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Enjoyed it.
Grapes and the cakes. Hey, come on to my house, come on.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden, and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought during the KHSU homepage.